I'm here today with Salah Boukadoum, who is one of the co-founders of Soap Hope, which is an online soap retailer with a very interesting mission. So Salah, thank you for joining us. And if you could go ahead and explain to us, what is Soap Hope and what are you trying to accomplish with it?
Okay. Well, Soap Hope really functions in two worlds at the same time. It's a business for profit, but it also has a social mission. So we think this is a pretty unique type of business model. The company itself sells all natural body care products online, things like soap, lotions, bath salts, shampoo and conditioner. And then at the end of each year, it takes its profits and it invests those profits into organizations that provide microloans for women in poverty all around the world.
Terrific. So could you give me a little bit about your background and the background of your co-founder? During my research, I know very briefly that it was in technology, and I'm wondering what experiences there, both kind of in terms of a skill set and lifestyle values, led you to start an online natural body care retailer that has this social mission to it?
Well, our former company, my business partner's name is Craig Turitelli, and in our former company, we really were focused on traditional business. It was a technology company that provided point-of-sale software and transaction processing services, so it was engineering-based, and it was a B2B-type environment. And I would say that as a company, we were somewhat progressive just because as entrepreneurs who have the opportunity to build an organization any way we wanted to, we had a very heavy focus on employees, a very inclusive company. And, in fact, in that company, every employee from the receptionist to the most senior engineer all had an ownership interest in our business. So we were already experimenting at that time with different kinds of organizations. But I think one of the key experiences we had there is our company focused on stored value. The products that we dealt with were all about prepaid instruments, whether it was wireless airtime or prepaid debit cards. And we realized early on that those kinds of instruments could be used to help deliver aid to people in poverty in third world countries. So we were thinking about it the whole time, but the pressure of running our first startup and it was extremely high growth, it really consumed all of our time and energy. After we sold that company in 2005, it gave us the breathing room and the time and energy to think about how to actually implement some anti-poverty measures on our own and in a new way. And that really started the thinking process for Soap Hope.
So why did you decide on a business rather than a nonprofit model to make a difference in the world?
Well, there's a lot of nonprofit activity in Dallas, which is where we're based, and we know people in that community. And so we were lucky to be able to see some of the challenges that nonprofits face. And one thing we were always kind of almost shocked about, really, was how many nonprofits can't focus on their mission to the extent that they would like to because they're always dealing with the fundraising challenge. They're always in fundraising mode. They always have to be reaching out to the community in the same way, saying, please provide us with funds that they then use and that only provide a social return. There's no monetary return in general in a traditional nonprofit. And it occurred to us that the principles that business runs on, which requires you to become self-sustaining very quickly, could be applied to different kinds of nonprofits. Not everyone, but there are lots and lots of missions that can be accomplished in ways that don't burn capital, but that actually preserve and grow capital. And we decided that the best role that we could play would be to prove that you could create self-sustaining organizations that have as part of their core mission, a social good. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about this in a bit about the good returns model, but our intention with Soap Hope was not just to create a business that did have a social mission, but that it would actually serve as a model for other companies, whether they're brand new startup concepts or whether they're companies that have been in existence for a long time, to show them how they can partner up with nonprofits so that the nonprofit gets a benefit and gets either to sustainability or at least closer to sustainability, and that in exchange, the business would view that activity as a good business decision just strictly by looking at the numbers. Even though there's a wonderful social good that comes out of it, that the social good is over and above the business benefit that comes out of the model.
So let's go and talk about the good returns model now. And I've done some reading about it, but I'd love to hear from you how that functions with Soap Hope and what you and Craig really envision coming from it, you know, kind of maybe starting in year one and extending into year five, and we can get into that. But if you could talk to us about the good returns model.
Okay. Well, good returns is really a model that is, it's a hypothesis right now, and Soap Hope is supposed to prove that it works. And we'll know in the next year or two whether the hypothesis is correct. And that is that if a company, especially a small or mid-sized company, will incorporate not just a small segment of cause marketing or social good, but if they'll truly build, integrate into the company as a part of its culture, it's a part of all of its decision-making, deep social mission, that company can operate and generate greater return on capital than a business that would go about using capital in a normal way. And the main driver of that would come in two ways. First, that customers would choose to do business with a company like ours over another company that sells similar products at similar prices because of the social mission that we have. And secondly, that we could forge relationships with nonprofits where we bring a benefit to them through capital and marketing, and that they would bring a corresponding benefit to us through their own marketing and networking, encouraging members and everybody else in their network to learn about our company and talk about our company. So over the long run, we expect that our marketing costs should be substantially lower than a company next door that's doing exactly the same thing but doesn't have the social mission integrated. If that's true, and we hope to prove in hard numbers to be able to show to any investor that that is true, then every company that is of our size or near our size should adopt the same model because they'll get higher return on capital for their investors or founders than they would otherwise. A lot of people ask me how it's possible to have a company that invests 100% of its profits. And that always is a trigger that they haven't quite understood the model. We're not donating our profits. We're creating a true for-profit company that pays dividends to shareholders. All we do is we delay our dividend by 1 year. So every year at the end of that year, we take all the profits that are generated and invest them for that 1 year period into our partner nonprofits. And they get use of that capital for a year, and they can do whatever is appropriate with that capital. It might be micro-lending, or later on we can talk about some other sustainable activities that nonprofits can do. And then after a year, they return the capital to us. And I think in some of the documents you've seen, you've probably seen that we treat that investment as a loan at 1%. And since that time, we've actually rethought that approach, and we're issuing 0% loans now. So it's a free use of capital over the year.
Okay, so interesting. My follow-up question was based on that 1% interest, and it was, is that enough to cover an actual devaluation over 1 year? And so ultimately, if you were to get a 1% return on the investment, is it a gain, a loss, or a wash for Soap Hope and for your shareholders?
Well, Well, let's look at it in terms of actual numbers. Let's say that in a certain year, maybe the third year of business, that Soap Hope generates $100,000 in profits. Let's say that it then invests those funds for a year, and at the end of that year, it pays out the $100,000 in dividends to its shareholders. And the shareholder had to wait an extra year to get the use of those funds. Well, how much interest could or return could an investor have earned on those funds? Obviously, it varies according to the type of investment that I make, but let's just pick a kind of mid-range number for today's economy. Let's say that they could make 5% interest on that money. Mm-hmm. So what they've foregone is $5,000. Mm-hmm. So my question is, how much marketing can I do for $5,000? Well, not very much. I can't get a TV commercial. I can't get a radio spot. I can't probably even get one ad in a magazine for a month for that $5,000. But the year of use of capital that my partner nonprofit got, not only did we get to do a very powerful social good with it, but they're going to talk about us with their constituents. We're going to be on radio and TV as people learn about this model and talk about it. There's all kinds of ways that that investment of capital is going to raise awareness of our company that we think will far exceed the $5,000 cost that the investor gave up. And, of course, whatever additional profits that drives, ultimately, after a year delay, those do become the new profits and the new return for the investor.
So what are your let me just go through the timeline. You founded Soap Hope, co-founded with Craig in 2008, and then you started, did you have the good returns, micro-lending, 100% of profits invested? Did you have that from the beginning, or was that, is that a new initiative?
No, we founded the company on that basis. It was founded in December of 2008, so obviously there was just a month there. There were no profits. And we hadn't had an opportunity yet to form our relationships because our intent is not to issue microloans directly. That's a very complex and deep subject of its own, and you need experts to do that. And there are lots of great organizations that are doing that all around the world. So we decided we would partner with organizations who are in that business. And so we spent quite a bit of this year just finding those right partners. It's not trivial to find the right kind of organization, not only that you're comfortable with them, but also that they're comfortable with you, because this is a new kind of relationship. A lot of nonprofits aren't used to it, and it's much deeper than the traditional co-marketing or co-branding relationship that a nonprofit might have with a business that just wants to get really a straight-up marketing benefit. They aren't truly interested in integrating the nonprofit mission into their business. So we had to find the right partners, and we spent several months this year doing that. And so now we're on track. I think you saw that we had issued a press release about our first formal partnership with the Plan Fund here in Dallas.
And what are some of the other, where are some of the other nonprofits located? And I wanted to hear about the selection process. And I know you spoke about that it was, quite thought out and conscientious. But where are your nonprofits located? How did you select them? And also, what's their response to this new business model?
Well, how it happened in our first year is probably a little different than how it will happen over the long term, because we think that as we grow the model and we get more people, more companies involved doing this, ultimately we'll probably have an application process for nonprofits because they should know about this and see it as a real benefit. But for the first year, we really had to go out there and search through our personal networks to find those right partners, and we just happened to be very lucky and have a lot of people who were helping us get connected to folks here in Dallas. It made sense for us, since we're a startup company, to try to keep things as simple as possible, and that means having partnerships in Dallas whenever possible. Early on, we were very lucky to meet with the folks at the Chavez Project. The Chavez Project is Dallas-based, and it's associated with Grameen Foundation, and it's a really amazing organization. They've raised millions of dollars for microfinance in South America, and they're a very forward-thinking organization. So they're growing rapidly, and they're evolving their models rapidly to get the most impact out of their funds that they possibly can. So we met with the leadership of that group, and immediately it was clear on both sides that our values aligned, that our missions aligned. And so right away, I mean, it was a matter of a couple of weeks before we started doing initiatives together. Soap Hope has done some things like providing products or gift certificates or things like that to help with some of the fundraising activities of the Chappas Project. And Chappas has brought a lot of attention to Soap Hope from organizations actually all around the world who are interested in social business or conscious business. They also were responsible for introducing us to our second partner fund, which is called Esperanza International. Esperanza is headquartered in Seattle, but they've got some people who either are on their board or work closely with them here in Dallas, and we were able to meet with them. And we've also done some interesting initiatives with them. We're looking at that they focus primarily in, or actually exclusively in, the Dominican Republic. And we're looking at potentially bringing some of the knowledge from our vendors about how to make these kinds of products to the Dominican Republic so that not only can we provide microfinance to people in need in Dominican Republic, but we also might be able to provide a forum for them to sell some of their products back here in the States. And then our third organization is the Plan Fund, and they also have really a special quality to them, which is they're providing microfinance in Dallas, and that's very unusual. The traditional microfinance models are built around really non-U.S.-based economies and infrastructures, and the circumstances inside the United States really don't lend themselves to the traditional microfinance model. And so what we love about the Plan Fund is that they're flexible enough to do experiments and figure out how to make microfinance work right here, where we also have people who need opportunity and economic assistance.
And what's the response of these different organizations? Are they wary of the obligation? Are they ecstatic that, you know, this opportunity is coming to them and they can see it as a sustainable partnership?
I think mostly the organizations, it takes a little while for them to really understand what we're talking about, because most nonprofits have trained themselves to be in the mode of just raising funds that they then burn. They burn them for a very good reason, and they get a very good result out of it, but nevertheless, they use them up, and then they're gone. So when we talk about providing a loan and requiring them to be able to repay that loan, even though it is interest-free, it takes a minute for them to say, well, how would I do that exactly? My organization isn't built today to operate in that environment. But for organizations that are flexible, that have flexible leadership, they see right away how this model can impact them and how it can grow the corpus that they have available for microfinance, and how the partnership can raise awareness of their own mission and efforts. And so it doesn't take very long, usually a meeting or two, before they start to think about how they might integrate it into their own day-to-day operations. And so far, everybody that we've talked with, it might have taken a meeting or it might have taken four meetings, but they've all come around to saying, yeah, we would like to do something like that, and we would like to see the model grow so that other nonprofits can also take advantage of it.
And then do you have to do some kind of consulting or hand-holding, or once they get it and it clicks and they have to find that flexibility and find those new paths to return the money, but are they okay on their own, or do you have a pretty consistent level of involvement in helping them to get that return?
No, we have a very high level of involvement. Nonprofits are just like any other organization. They have momentum and they have ways of thinking, And to change those paths requires sustained effort. And so we do spend quite a bit of time working with leadership in these organizations to say, hey, have you thought about maybe doing this kind of an event or taking this kind of an approach or launching this kind of marketing initiative? And then as far as the use of funds are concerned, some organizations actually have trouble at first understanding how exactly to segregate those funds that we are providing on a loan basis from funds that they are receiving on a donated basis. So we've even had one organization say, you know what, for the first year, what we want to do is we want to work with you on the marketing side of things, and when you provide us with the loan, we're just going to put it in the bank, and we're going to return it to you at the end of the year. We're not actually going to deploy it in the first year into the field. That way it's kind of like a practice run. The organizations can get their day-to-day operations together, the way that we communicate about each other together, and the organization can practice taking funds and returning funds, make sure that that works at every level, at the board level, with their council and all of those things. And then the second year, they'll put that sort of practice round into action where they actually deploy the funds into the field. Other organizations are maybe more sophisticated or have done something like this before, where they've borrowed from a bank or where they've had some kind of a guarantor help them raise funds using leverage. And in those cases, you know, they're ready to go right away. And we're willing to work with that whole spectrum. And one of our long-term goals is that Soap Hope will have enough of these interactions that we can actually provide templates for other businesses and other nonprofits so we can teach them how to do this and they don't have to figure it out from scratch the way that we're doing.
Now, is this you and Craig, or do you have other people that, you know, consultants or freelancers that help you get these projects off the ground working with specific nonprofits?
Right now, Craig and I are driving the energy behind these initiatives, but we have lots and lots of people that have stepped forward right here in Dallas who are willing to help in all kinds of different ways, whether that's sitting down and just listening to what we're trying to accomplish and giving advice, or whether it's reviewing the legal structure of maybe a loan agreement that we would put together with a nonprofit, or making introductions to people who have expertise in microfinance. And what we're finding is there are so many people right here in our own community that are doing good work and also that would like to do more good work and are looking for an outlet. So it's exciting to discover, you know, to come across in our own backyard this big drive and energy for doing good in the world and solving social problems that we just really weren't aware of. It's probably been here the whole time, and now that we've got our attention on it, we feel very lucky and blessed to be included in that.
And is your vision to scale the nonprofit?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Sorry. Is your vision to scale the nonprofit partners do you have a cap on what your vision is, or in 10 years can you see Soap Hope partnering up with 100 nonprofit, micro lending, sustainability organizations?
We actually have a meta view of what's happening here. For Soap Hope itself, we would like the company to ultimately generate $1 million annually for use in these kind of programs. But bigger than that, we would like to create a whole movement built around the good returns model. And our goal is that during the next 5 years, we recruit 99 other companies to implement this model so that we have 100 good returns companies in the world. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be exactly the same way that Soap Hope is doing it. Not every company is structured from a capital perspective and investment perspective to be able to allocate 100% of profits, because that requires a special kind of cash flow through the organization. And our organization just happens to fit that kind of model because we have an inventory-based business that has quick turn on inventory and very little fixed costs. But there are other ways that you could implement good returns that are still powerful, that have deeply integrated mission inside the organization, and there are other kinds of capital deployments that can be sustainable other than microfinance. So at the same time as we're building SoPo, we're also working a little bit more slowly, but nevertheless working on a steady basis to build good returns as a formal mechanism for connecting nonprofits and for-profits and teaching both sides how to make this kind of bridge between the two worlds. And we believe that if we could create 100 of these, that would be enough of a mass of consciousness that the model will spread very quickly throughout the rest of the country and the rest of the world. It could potentially generate billions of dollars of capital to be deployed for social causes that right now are tied up in companies that think that they can't do this kind of deep social mission because they think that it dings their bottom line. So to show with 100 different examples that this is the opposite, this actually drives the bottom line, we think that's enough of a movement that it will start to catch on more broadly.
And, you know, that reminds me of the 1% for the planet, how it's a bit different, but it's getting companies aligned with one mission or one movement, and also B Corporation. And, again, those companies are quite varied underneath the B Corporation approval, but it's that same type of movement generation and then tipping of the tide.
I completely agree. They're very similar concepts. They take their approach differently and their models differently, but the idea of teaching companies how to do this and the benefit of doing this, we all share that same concept.
And this is interesting. I didn't realize that this is part of your mission, and it strikes a chord with me in creating these movements and reaching out to companies to implement these programs and to show them that having a social mission is helpful for your business. It's not just going to be a wash. And how are you starting to go about this already? Is it more the planning stage, or have you started to reach out to companies and talk to them about this?
I've started a very small informal group here in Dallas of people who I trust or that I've had positive experiences with, just to get together on a periodic basis about once a month and talk about what SoPo is doing at the good returns level and to get their feedback on how to move this idea forward. Sometime next year, this is October, so for SoPo itself, it's going to be the busiest time of the year as a retailer. But sometime next year, that process will get formalized, and I'll start to build a committee or something like that that meets on a regular basis with specific intention to start researching and documenting good returns models and building a formal plan that we can follow so that we can reach that five-year target of 100 companies. And there's no shortage of people who have shown up interested to help do that, from as varied as people who have experience in political campaigns, which I find very interesting because of this idea of organizing people who have at their root some sort of social, either social mission or social viewpoint, all the way to entrepreneurs or retired business people. So there's definitely a lot of energy for it here, and next year will be the time to start organizing it.
That's interesting. So I want to take a quick step back, and I've been curious that you and Craig had a successful business in the engineering and tech sector. And from a business perspective, why did you decide on an online body product retailing business to test out the good returns model?
There's a couple of special factors that make a business like this better than an engineering business or something like that for good returns. The first is we want to make sure for our test that there's a whole closed loop in terms of the supply chain where we can bring that entire supply chain in harmony. And what I mean by that is it it's just as important to us to have our suppliers supporting what we do as it is to have our customers supporting what we do, as it is to have our nonprofits properly aligned with us. If any of those pieces isn't really focused in the same way, then the mission is tougher to achieve. It may not make it impossible, but with, as with any experiment, we want to take out all the obstacles that we can right up front. So here's some concrete examples of benefits that we would get. Because we're consumer-based, we're going to have lots and lots of voices out there that we can communicate with who can then spread the word. In a B2B environment, generally, the number of endpoints that you have on the customer side is going to be smaller, and that just means less voices. And those voices are more focused on their business day. With our customers, this is, they're buying from us as a part of their life. This is a product they use in the morning and in the evening, and it's something that they can think about any time of day. So lots and lots of voices that are available to us, that was an important consideration. And then on the vendor side, we would like to be able to offer the opportunity to vendors to sponsor and participate in the activities of our nonprofit partners. And with soap, it's such a great product because this isn't a bar of soap like you would buy at the grocery store. These are beautiful, they're colorful, they smell incredible, they're very tactile, and they really impact all of your senses. And people talk about them. And so they're a great, and they're not very expensive. So they're great for including in things like fundraisers or in communications to a donor base, and they draw a lot of attention. So we're able to do things like this Saturday, the Chappas Project will have a Halloween fundraiser, and one of our suppliers, they're named Indigo Wild, has provided 250 bars of soap. We wrap them all up to look like Halloween candy, and we're handing them out at the event along with gift certificates. So that's a very inexpensive way that we can generate a lot of buzz about the company and its mission. It's great for the supplier, it's great for the nonprofit, and it's great for Soap Hope. And in a more technical type of business, those kinds of things, those opportunities just aren't as powerful. So we felt like that aspect of the business model was going to help us. And in addition to that, this particular product lends itself to the end recipient of a microloan. Most microloans are issued to women, and if you do some research on microfinance, you'll find that impact of microloans on women, the result is much, much better than when you issue them to men, and that's for a whole variety of reasons. But that really meshes well with the product as well, because the majority of our customers are women, the majority of our suppliers are women, and so this aspect of compassion is just more awakened in that environment. I think it just fits together better, and we're already seeing the results of that in our own business.
Mm-hmm. So what type of skills were you able to transfer from your previous company to an online natural product company? Did you and Craig go through a learning curve? I mean, you're obviously, it seems that you're capable businessmen, but this is a different type of business than before.
It sure is. It is a huge learning curve, actually. Any new industry that you get into is full of relationships and nuances that are absolutely critical to learn about and that just take time. But we were able to bring a lot to the table from our last business, because the last company, since it dealt with software and technology, it was very process-oriented. Everything was about documentation, scheduling, quality control, resource management. And we decided right up front that despite the more touchy-feely nature of the business and the mission, we were going to use those same business-focused, management-focused approaches in this company, especially because we intend to grow it very quickly. And we do have very rapid growth now. We've got, since the founding of the company, it's grown 25% month over month. So when that happens, in order to avoid chaos, you really have to have a great process in place. So we have processes for everything from how to order and stock inventory, how to fill orders, how we communicate with customers, every area of the business as we come to it. We make our best approach at it, write it down, teach our employees, and use continuous improvement to make sure that the processes are keeping up with the business.
That's terrific growth. And how many employees do you have now?
Right now it's just Craig and myself and two other employees. One is focused on marketing and communications, and the other is focused on operations, which mostly means stocking and pulling inventory and making sure that customer orders go out the door.
And what are your wholesale relationships like? Do you buy at the same price as other retailers? And do you have different types of – the quality of your relationships with your wholesalers different given your model and your mission?
That's an interesting question because how it's happened is maybe different than how I would have imagined that it would happen. We talk about our mission everywhere, whether it's with suppliers or anyone else. And what we've learned is it takes a long time, multiple communications, before people understand the depth of our mission. And I think part of that is because so many companies out there will kind of will have some charitable purpose that's very limited. It's really just kind of at the surface. They might give a small percentage of sales to a nonprofit, or they might have a day where all sales go to a certain good cause. And all of those things are wonderful, but they also generate a lot of kind of noise around giving. And what we're doing is much deeper, much more integrated into our whole business. And it takes a while for our partners to understand the depth of that. So what we found is it's best to work with suppliers on just a pure business level like any other retailer would, and over time to introduce the leadership of those suppliers to what we're doing. And that's been very effective. And at this point, all of our suppliers really understand the purpose of our business and take it very seriously, and they really help us to raise awareness, and we'll do all kinds of things, including donating product for our nonprofits or promoting our mission through their own marketing efforts. But as far as things like terms or pricing, SoPope has to stand on its own. We get the same pricing as any other retailer and the same kinds of terms as any other retailer, and we go through the same hard-nosed negotiations with our suppliers as any company would do with their traditional suppliers.
I'm particularly interested in Pangea Organics. I know that you carry that line, and I did an interview with Joshua Onisco, who's the founder, and he's running also a very progressive business in terms of the profits that they give back, and he's looking at co-ops and microlending and their employee programs, and of course also their organic and sustainable packaging and ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been able to connect with him directly, or do you deal with his people, and were they quicker to catch on to your mission than some of the others?
No, actually, that company is the most recent addition to our product line, and we have only an indirect relationship with Pangea, so we haven't reached that level of communication with them, although I'm sure down the road we will. We carry six manufacturers, and like I said, they're the sixth one that we added. The first, the second, and third companies that we added to our lineup, we've been able to create direct relationships with the president or whoever the leader is of each of those companies. We're very fortunate that one of our companies, they're called Fresh, is located within driving distance of our offices, so we're actually able to go meet with them on a pretty regular basis. And another of our makers is in Austin, so sometime next year we're going to get to go visit with them. And our third maker, which is Indigo Wild, they're the ones who gave bars of soap for the Chappas project, they're in Kansas City, and we have regular contact with them on the phone, through Twitter, through Facebook, and all of those things. And next year we'll get to go do a tour of their facility as well. So we're definitely well connected with the suppliers in that way.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we started out talking about was reduced or non-existent marketing costs and using not only your nonprofit partners but also your customer base to be your marketers and your voice and to cut back your marketing dollars there so that you can, so to speak, invest those dollars in the nonprofits. How do you leverage your customer base to be a voice for you?
Our experience with customers is just like it is with suppliers. A lot of our customers, we do surveys online or through the mail or through telephone, and we learn quite a bit about them. And what we found is the first time or two that the majority of customers buy from us, they don't know about our social mission. Even though it's plastered all over our website and in the materials that we send to them, they're there to buy soap. Unless they happen to have learned about us from another customer who did understand about the mission. So we expect over time that that aspect of the networking side of our business will grow. But early on, we really have to compete strictly on the basis of good marketing and good products. And so what we do is we reinforce the message of our mission in all kinds of ways. We've learned some nice little tricks. For instance, if you get a package from Soap Hope, not only will there be information about us inside the package, but every bar of soap is wrapped in a piece of tissue paper for protection. And you will find inside one of those wrapped pieces a little marketing piece that says, "Can shopping at Soap Hope change the world?" And it explains what a microloan is.
And talk to us about the ugly box, too. I thought that that was really clever.
Yeah. This is another place where the bottom line and doing the right thing really coincide with each other. Boxes are expensive. It can cost 30 or 50 cents or a dollar, depending on the size of the box, just for the cardboard to ship something in. So we go to our local retailers around us who sell things like office supplies or books or things like that, where they have clean cardboard boxes that their things come in. And normally they're either going to throw them away or hopefully at least recycle them. And we go and pick those boxes up and bring them back here, and we cut them up into pieces and then wrap all of our products inside those pieces of cardboard. We did that starting very early on in the business, and we got a terrible backlash from customers who said, this box is so ugly, there's no way I could ever give a gift from your company to a friend. So rather than abandon it, we just made a sticker that announces on the box, is this box ugly and why we do it. And ever since that time, it completely turned the problem around. People love the ugly box, and if you look at communications from our customers, everybody talks about how pleased they are with that box. So it saves us money, it saves the customer money, and it's better than recycling. Reusing is better than recycling.
Yeah, I thought that was brilliant and humorous with the "Am I ugly?" So that's a good story. So I know in your previous company, you had all of your employees had a share in the company. How do your employees benefit from the good returns model and Soap Hope principles for Soap Hope?
There's a few ways. We think that they're important ways. One thing we've noticed, maybe you've seen this as well, that a lot of people, especially young people, are becoming very aware of their connection to their community and to the world. And they're looking for ways to give back and to protect and to contribute to the well-being of the global community. And so for an employee at Soap Hope, the kind of employee that matters to, that's a huge benefit, because every day they spend their day doing whatever job they would be doing anyway, but they know that the impact of their job is huge in a non-traditional way and in a social way. So our employees to date, I mean, there's only two, but I expect this is going to be a continuing trend. They really get it, and they have a lot of passion behind helping Soap Hope succeed for that reason. The other thing is, I think sometimes all of us can get caught up in the drudgery of some of the day-to-day chores that we all have to do. There's no job that I'm aware of, you know, no matter how great it is, that doesn't have its chores. You have to fill out some sheet or do some process or whatever it is that's just not that fun. But when you do that, knowing that that particular process is contributing not just to you getting a paycheck and some shareholder making a return, but that it has a real impact on the lives of people who really, really need help. And we're not talking about people who need a little help. These are people who are, don't have enough food to eat every day or whose children don't have a roof over their head. I think that makes a big difference in the satisfaction that you can take home at the end of the day.
And do you expect to be profitable this year, in year one?
We will be close to profitable. Whether it's actually a positive number or a small negative number, we'll find out. It depends on how good Christmas is. We'll certainly be profitable in year two. And we have made commitments to some of our nonprofit partners that even if we don't make a profit, we will provide some amount of invested capital. Obviously, if the company's not profitable, then Craig and I will make a capital contribution to the business to enable that to happen. But we want to make sure that we get the practice this year of making that first investment and then seeing that investment returned and replaced in the second year.
That's really wonderful. You guys are obviously very invested in this. You know, one of my favorite questions, which I don't ask enough, but what books or companies or entrepreneurs inspired you and or Craig to go off on this new path?
Well, that's a good question. We probably are not integrated enough into the social business or conscious business community as it is, because I know there's so much being done in that field, and I know there was a conference this year, a SOCAP conference, we didn't get to attend because we're consumed with the the day-to-day that's required to get a startup off the ground. But I think that there are a couple folks that have really dramatically impacted me, for sure. The story of Muhammad Yunus, anybody who hasn't read that story should read the short version of it. It's truly incredible about how this man in Bangladesh went out into the village and found that all of the assumptions that he'd learned about in business school were completely upside down, and then took a completely upside down approach to lending and has transformed the lives of millions of people. We also have been really influenced by local Dallas leaders, people like Lucy Billingsley, who founded the Chappas Project, and some national figures who are focusing on microfinance. I put up a blog post about a gentleman named Steve Brookshire. If you haven't seen it, I'll send you a link to it, who has a vision of transforming the Dominican Republic into a poverty-free zone within his lifetime. So I guess the common thread is it's those people who have looked at big, giant problems, and instead of either saying, well, I can't do that, I can deal with a few, you know, small problem in my own local community or in my family, or have said it's, you know, it's not possible, we don't even need to try. It's those people who say, well, it's a huge problem, and we are going to solve this problem. It is unacceptable that there is poverty in the world. Those are the people who have provided a lot of inspiration for us, and we're working to be the same way. It takes a certain kind of energy to sit in a 1,000-square-foot office and warehouse facility and see, you know, five or six figures worth of revenue, and to hold at the same time a vision that says we're going to generate billions of dollars through a new kind of model that's going to have a transformative impact on the society. But it's only through that kind of sustained energy that anything big can get done. So we've decided that we're just going to have the confidence and willpower to do that.
So you, I mean, and that's a great point that you brought up, that you sitting in your office getting caught up in the day-to-day, you need to remind yourself about what the mission is and really what the potential impact for this is. So how do you do that? Is it as simple as trying to catch yourself when you feel, you know, frustrated or mired in something banal? What are your mechanisms for that?
Well, this is a very personal thing. I don't know if it works the same way for everybody, but for me, it's absolutely critical to have a business partner, because by having a partner who is aligned with you in not just your goals, but really your long-term vision, when one of you gets hit with, oh, I just spent an hour and a half trying to get the printer to work, the other one doesn't have to be in that same space, and they can remind you, reset your focus on that long-term vision. And so I'm just happen to be lucky to have a business partner who I work very well with and that I trust and who shares a common vision. I encourage anybody who's in a startup environment not to go it alone, but really to work hard to find that partner or partners who can help carry the torch when you get tired, because inevitably one or the other of you will. So it's very good to have that person by your side.
So I'm very, you know, I'm really looking forward to watching your vision and your impact develop and seeing more companies adopt the good returns model and more organizations benefit from it and more customers benefit from it as well, because, you know, in the end, I know you are offering competitive pricing and, you know, quality products and everything, and just kind of towing the line of business first and foremost. Is there anything else that you wanted to add today, Fella?
Just the same thing that I always ask of everybody, which is if you believe in the model, to tell as many people as possible, help us get the word out. That's the way it works in this business. And if you know of anybody or any organization that is interested in learning more about good returns and potentially participating in that process, to send them our way. People can find us online at soaphope.com. You can send an email to anything at soaphope.com, info or Sala or any other address, and it will end up in my email box. The only way to make something like this work is through a network and through public support. So that's what we ask for.
That's terrific. I really enjoyed speaking with you today. Thank you so much.
I did too. Thank you very much for the time and for the opportunity.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.